So we have started this series of three books. The first one is called Manashodhanam. Manashodhanam, which means purity of the mind. Mana means mind and Shodhanam means purity. Purity of the mind. And last week, we had covered, had talked a little bit about the author of this book, Swami Tejomayananda, whom we call Guruji. And he is the worldwide head of the Chinmaya Mission, running over 300 centers throughout the world. And then I had talked briefly about what is the mind. As we had said, the mind is the flow of thoughts. Just as a river is a flow of water, so mind is a flow of thoughts. And if there is no water, there is no river. If there is no flow, there is no river either. Similarly, a mind which is devoid of thoughts, or a mind in silence, as we experience in deep sleep, or in awake-ish time you can experience in meditation, then such a mind is said to be no mind. And then a person who can stay in that state is said to have gone beyond the mind. And then we talked last week about what is purification and what are the impurities. Just as if there is a bucket of water which is reflecting the sunlight into the room, if the bucket is dirty or if the bucket is shaking, agitated, the reflection of the sun will not come into the room. So similarly, our mind is what reflects the consciousness. The consciousness is within us. But the reason we are alive and able to function, the consciousness is everywhere, not only within us, but outside everywhere. But in the mind, the consciousness gets reflected in the mind and intellect. And that is why the body is enlivened. And that is why the person is able to walk and talk. Now, if the mind is dirty, that means filled with negative thoughts, anger, hatred, jealousy. Or if the mind is extremely agitated, very disturbed for whatever reason, then such a mind is said to be an impure mind. And then that person's mind is impure, and that's when all the problems start. So we had talked about that last week. So today I'll try to finish the rest of the introduction. So the question is, why should we purify the mind? You know, we are on the spiritual journey. All I have to do is sit and contemplate upon the meaning of life and what is God and what is Brahman and what is my relationship. And I can read the books, you know, all the books are available in the libraries, on the internet, and then I meditate and contemplate and I reach. What is the role of the mind? Why sit down and work to purify the mind? The mind is necessary for spiritual progress. If a person's mind is not pure, then that person just cannot evolve spiritually. And Swamiji in his book talks about a leader who has great power, is very powerful, as is the president or the dictator or... But if his mind is full of anger and hatred and jealousy and competition and a desire to acquire and possess, then that person will create problems. And we find so many wars. In the past, the wars used to be based on ideology, you know, Nazi versus, you know, the British American system, or communism versus, you know, capitalism. But unfortunately, now we find majority of the wars are based on religion. You know, religion is something, because the religion comes from the root ligare. The Latin word ligare means to bind. So religion is supposed to bind people, supposed to bring together. And unfortunately, most of the problems in the world are because of religious conflicts. Why? Because people have not understood the meaning of religion and they have not purified their mind. They have blindly accepted a few tenets. And without mental purification, a lot of conflicts come. So for a spiritual seeker, it is very important. Purity of the mind is the preparation for spiritual evolution. There is a very beautiful story I had heard. There was this kingdom where they used to have a king only for 5 years. The king was not hereditary. It was not father to son to... They used to have a volunteer system, whoever wants to become a king, and then they would see that he's qualified. So they would let people volunteer. But there was a little catch, that you could only be king for 5 years. And after 5 years, they used to take the king across the river to an island on the other side of the river where there were wild animals and a jungle and horrible, no food, nothing. And the king would be left there, and then obviously the wild animals would eat him, he would have no food. So you could only be king for 5 years, and the condition was at the end of 5 years, a boatman will take you and leave you there. You can't refuse. You cannot say, I'm the king. So, but people used to still volunteer, you know, why? Because it's a glory to be the king and everybody bows to you and you get to enjoy all the pleasures of, you know, the palace and the food and whatever else, you know, joys of the palace, everything he can enjoy. Okay, after 5 years, I have to die anyway. So people used to volunteer, but then when they would be going to, after 5 years, they would be very miserable because they had enjoyed so much and then suddenly. Anyway, so one time this one visionary person volunteered. He said, I'll be the king. So they found him to be qualified, so they made him the king. And he ruled very nicely for 5 years. He was a very good king, passed very good laws. And at the end of the 5 years, they said, Your Highness, it's time to go. And he was very happy. Yes, I'm ready. Most of the others used to be crying or used to be depressed. You know, I don't want to go. They would have to forcefully put them in the boat. Oh, I'm ready to go. So they took him across the river, and when they approached the island, they found that the island had changed. He was a visionary. He knew that 5 years from now, I'm going to be sent to that island. So what did he do? He first sent his troops to kill all the animals. He said, kill all the animals, you know, so that no one is there to eat me. And then he sent his gardeners and his, you know, other carpenters to remove all the forest, the brush, clean that out, and then make it into lumber and timber. And then he sent his builders, okay, you go and build houses. So in these 5 years, he was planning. Then he sent his men there, okay, you go and start living there. Some of the wise people were made ministers, and some of the business people and the farmers. And then he gave them loans to start businesses, to start farms. And he developed a nice city over there in the 5 years. And the city was booming and prosperous. And, you know, he had a lot of wealth, so he was able to finance. So when he went there, everybody welcomed him. Oh, our king has come. And they all were grateful to him because he had got them all started. And so he went there and he was totally happy. He had no problems, no complaints. So we also have to be visionary because our mind is full of a lot of animals like anger and jealousy and greed and hatred. And then there are forests of desires and forests of, you know, false beliefs and false, you know, prejudices and this, you know, that my religion alone is right or I am alone right. This, so all these forests and these animals have to be cleared. Our mind has to be cleared of all prejudices, false beliefs, all the negativities that we have in the mind. And then at the same time, just as he developed the place and put good people there, so we also have to purify our mind and put good thoughts in there and good ideas and good concepts and cultivate the mind so that the mind becomes a good place to live. And we find that some people say, oh my God, my mind is my biggest enemy. And they can't sit for a moment alone. Why? Because they cannot face their mind. Their mind is so agitated and so stressed out. And yesterday a patient came to me. She used to come to this meditation class, and now she hasn't come for a while. She had some surgery and all. And she was talking constantly the 10 or 15 minutes in my office. She didn't stop 1 minute. And she says, my mind is running. I don't know what to do with it. And she realized that I'm talking so much. I told her, I said, go to one corner of my waiting room. I have taught you how to meditate. Just sit down and watch your breath. You don't need to talk so much. So we find that our mind controls us. So what we have to do is, like that king, you know, develop good qualities, purify the mind, put the right kind of real rulers. See, our mind should be under the control of the intellect, under the control of our right ideas and right thoughts. But we let the mind control us, and our judgment, our decision making is all clouded. So that is how they say you have to purify the mind, and that's why purification of the mind is very important. Just as the king had prepared 5 years ahead, So we are also on this spiritual journey towards the self, towards the truth. And unless your mind is clean, you will never reach it. You can read all the books you want. You can do whatever you want, like a scholar. You know, the scholar and the saint, what is the difference? Scholar has read all the scriptures. He knows Sanskrit, he can chant, he can translate all the Upanishads, he can give talks, you know, like I am doing. May not know anything, but able to deliver beautiful talks. And so he can do that. Why? Because he has understood, he has read the scriptures, he knows the Sanskrit, or maybe he knows Latin and he knows Greek. So he can quote all the verses from the Bible. But what is the difference? But does that make him a saint? Just because a person can chant or can quote the scriptures does not make you a saint. A saint also has the knowledge, but he may not have that much knowledge. And the scholar will say, he does not know all the details of the Upanishads. He does not know the details of Sanskrit grammar. But the saint has immense purity of mind. The purity of the mind, the purity of the heart. And such a person does not need to have power. Does not need to have power. There may be a person, as we said, who has a lot of power, but if the mind is not pure, the kingdom or the country can become a havoc. But a saint, just because of the purity of his or her thoughts and emotions, without any power, look at Jesus, what power did he have? Look at Buddha, he was just a monk, you know, didn't even have an extra pair of, maybe he just had one pair of clothes and a begging bowl. He had nothing. Look at Mahatma Gandhi, you know, he just wore one simple, but such these people were able to influence so many others because of the purity of their thoughts and their power of their ideas. So that is the difference between us. A saint has the experience. A scholar does not have the experience. He thinks just by intellectual understanding, I am consciousness. By saying that, experience does not happen. You know, we have said that so many times. I am that consciousness. But until your mind is pure, you cannot become a saint. Purification of the mind is the number one criteria, number one prerequisite for a spiritual seeker. And the only way you can progress spiritually if you purify your mind. Otherwise, you can study, you can read, you can chant, you can quote, but you won't get anywhere. And so that's again what the same thing that I had said in the past one. The knowledge and the purity are both required. One might say, I only need to purify my mind, I'll be a good individual. I'll help the world, I'll do a lot of good, I'll serve the people. That's wonderful. And that's very good. But again, you will not realize the truth. You will become a very good person, you will accumulate good karmas, you will do a lot of good deeds. But unless you sit down with a teacher and study the scriptures and understand the meaning of this phrase that I am consciousness, who is God, who am I, what is the nature of this world? What is my relationship to the world? What is my relationship to God? And how can I reach that state of God enlightenment? Actually, what Swamiji in his introduction says, we are that consciousness. That consciousness is not far away from us. It is my own true nature. But because of a lack of knowledge and a lack of purity, I am not able to experience the truth. So we definitely need to purify our mind, do pure things, do good things, and at the same time, read the scriptures, but read it with a qualified teacher. Somebody who not only has... See, there may be a professor, you know, who is in a university, Banaras Hindu University, who is a PhD in Sanskrit, but does not have the experience of the truth. So, there's a text called Vivek Chudamani where it says that who is the correct teacher who has the knowledge and who has the experience? Shrotriyam Brahma Nishtha. So, he should have the right knowledge, and he should have the highest experience. Only then a teacher is worth his salt, is worth his name. So that is why they say they both are equally important. One has to have the right knowledge and one has to have purity of mind. Then they say that in this spiritual journey, all three aspects of our personality have to be harnessed, have to be put in place. Some people are great scholars, they know a lot, but physically they are weak. They don't take care of their health and they're all the time sick and all the time going to the doctor or going to the hospital. Or mentally, their mind is full of impurities, full of negativity, full of sorrows. Then no matter how much that person knows, he cannot sit down and meditate, he cannot sit down and contemplate, he cannot even sit because his back hurts all the time. And so he may not. Or another person may be very sweet and loving, as we said, but may not have the right knowledge. Or maybe physically so unhealthy that can't accomplish anything. And then, of course, we have a lot of people in this day and age, what we find that physical health, everybody knows. You know, everybody knows that I have to eat healthy, I have to go to the gym 3 times a week, I have to visit the doctor, I have to take aspirin, I have to get my cholesterol checked. So we all know that. And also intellectually, we find that with the advent of computers and internet and all this, you know, modern gadgets, that intellectually also most people have, you know, basic knowledge. If they are a college graduate, they are able to use a computer. Then intellectually they have the knowledge, and physically they at least have an awareness of health. They are not maybe 100% picture of health, but especially in California, we find that people are more health conscious. Like if you look at everybody in the room, you know, the biggest problem is that they do not pay any attention to the mind, that I have to purify. So what I'm saying is all three aspects of our personality have to be simultaneously developed and simultaneously developed. Does not mean that you have to be a bodybuilder and you have to, you know, be able to bench press 200 pounds or whatever, but to be generally healthy. In the Upanishad, there is a very beautiful line. It says, Thirai angaihi stushtu vagam sastanubihi vyashema devahitam yadayuhu. So the student and the teacher pray together at the beginning of the Upanishads of the study that may our bodies be healthy. Whatever life you have given us, O Lord, whether it's 50 years, 70 years, 80 years, may I be healthy. Now, why do you want to be healthy? Just so that you can eat more pizzas or you can have more, you know, drinks, or you can travel all over the world? No, he says, I want to be healthy so I can serve you. Oh Lord, I can serve you in the people of the world. That is why I want health. Whatever time you have given me, I am cheerfully ready to leave when it's time for leave. But as long as I am here, may I be an instrument of yours and may I serve the world. So that is the essence of this, that all aspects of the personality, so that I can then serve the world. And that's what they say, we have talked about before. The purpose of the body is to serve. That is the main purpose of getting human birth, is to serve, is to make the world a better place. Otherwise, you have wasted your time. My mother used to have a very beautiful phrase. He says, Janni jane to bhakt jane ya data ya sur, nahi to janni banj bhali kahe gawai noor. He says a mother should have one of the three kinds of children. Either the child should be a bhakta, should be a devotee of the Lord, or data, or should be a generous person, do charity, or shur, or he should be a brave person who can work for, you know, willingly sacrifice even for his country. He says those are the only kind of three kinds of children worth having. If you don't have those, then you are wasting your youth. Then why even become pregnant and lose all the youth? Because then you have wasted your time. So if you are a mother, you have to have these three kinds of children. Either the person should be devoted to the Lord, should be a generous person, or should be a brave person who can sacrifice his life for the country, for others. So that is the purpose of addressing all aspects. So with the body, I serve the Lord. With the mind, we have talked about before, I love the Lord. I love him. I turn all my, and that's, we have talked many times, that God is not somebody to be feared or somebody to be, to have a conflict with, but God is loving, and constantly one has to love and develop a relationship of love, not a relationship of fear, because most religions unfortunately teach fear, that through fear, you know, if you don't do this, God will punish you and you will be condemned to hell forever and all the fires will burn you and, you know, all that. You know, for ignorant people or for beginners, it may be okay. You know, yeah, if somebody is bad, at least by the fear of God. And that's why they say you should be a God-fearing individual. But we say, no, you should be a God-loving individual, not a God-fearing individual. Because once you love God, then all the divine qualities come. And that's what we find in the lives of saints. When you see Jesus or when you see Buddha or Guru Nanak or Swami Chinmayananda or Shankaracharya, when you see all these great saints, you see the Lord standing right in front of you. So with the body I serve him, with the mind I love him, and with my intellect I learn about him. So I pick up the scriptures, I read, I go to a teacher and I learn. So that's why they say all aspects of your personality should be diverted in that one direction. And what is that? Spiritual enlightenment. Then another point is that a mind should be made a friend. You know, because in meditation we say we have to conquer the mind, or we have to defeat the mind, or we have to overcome the mind, and then we develop this relationship of enmity with the mind. My mind is my enemy. And when I sit for meditation, my mind doesn't stay so forcefully. I fight with the mind and I get into conflicts. So they say, no, mind should be made your friend. Mind is your constant companion. You cannot get rid of the mind. Until the day you die, you will have your mind, and the mind will always be there. So make the mind a friend in your spiritual journey, in your meditation. If the mind is wandering, you tell the mind, okay, you know, yeah, I know right now you are thinking about my child or thinking about my boss or work or money, but this is not the time. Let us now think about the Lord. So you make the mind your friend. And also you find that for spiritual progress, as your mind becomes your friend, as you understand what is the mind, as you purify the mind, the mind slowly becomes your friend and becomes your ally. And that is how the spiritual evolution happens, when the mind is my friend. And that is what, so the idea that I have to fight with the mind or make a conflict is not, that's not true meditation. In true meditation, we take the mind with us and slowly evolve. And as the mind gets more and more, starts enjoying this spiritual silence and this spiritual peace and the chanting of the name of the Lord and all that, then slowly, slowly that mind becomes silent. The mind becomes, you know, peaceful. And that is how, you know, then in that peaceful mind, in that silent mind, the consciousness shines very well. The consciousness is with us. That is why we are walking and talking and speaking. But the mind that is agitated is away from the Lord. The mind that is quiet and peaceful becomes our friend. And that can only happen by understanding what is the mind, what composes the mind, why does the mind behave like it does. And that is what we will be covering in the next few months as we do this text. All these topics will be addressed about what is mind, what are the impurities of the mind, why does the mind do what it does, and how can we influence our mind so that it becomes a positive force, not only for us, but then a person who has a quiet, peaceful mind can then help so many people in society, and he becomes a source of change. He slowly evolves towards sainthood. And then what is the benefit of that? Why should I purify my mind? You know, because we are all benefit oriented. We are all profit motive. That is the only reason. Like even people who are here, they say, what am I going to get out of this class? I'm going to waste 1 hour, but am I going to learn anything? Am I going to benefit? Otherwise, I should be home watching TV. So here also, they say, as your mind becomes quieter, as your mind becomes stable, it becomes available to you. Right now, our mind is running in 100 directions, like that patient of mine is, and it's not available for what I need it for. And what I need it for is to, for it to be available to do what I want it to do, not only in the spiritual world, but say I want to accomplish, I want to do very well in a test. I have an interview tomorrow, or I have a test tomorrow, or I have a major project that I want to do, or I have any great, I'm in a position of a CEO of my company, or I'm a teacher, or I'm a business person. If the mind is agitated, if the mind is disturbed, then even in the secular world, even in the materialistic world, progress is very difficult. So they say, purify your mind, take it with you, and make sure your mind is available for what you want. Whether I want to sit and meditate, or whether I want to take a test, or whether I want to start a new internet company, or whether I want to run a country or run a state, in all these, the mind has to be available. And they say that when the mind is available, then 3 R's happen. One is reception, retention, and recollection. Reception means, you know, you go to a lecture, you're listening to some Swamiji speaking or some good teacher speaking, and you are listening, but half the time your mind is wandering somewhere else, or you are thinking, you know, you're coming to your own conclusions about what the teacher is talking, or, you know, you're wool gathering, or you fall asleep, or you lose interest. So the mind is not aware. And then afterwards, when you come out of the lecture and somebody says, what did Swamiji say, or what was the talk? Oh, it was very good. Really? What did he say? What did he say? Something he spoke about the mind. And you should have been there. You would have enjoyed it. So that is the problem. You know, we go to listen to these great teachers and speakers, and when we sit down, we don't remember what he said or what she said. So first is reception. You listen carefully, then you recollect. Then you retain. What I have listened, I can now retain. I can make it firmly in my mind. And then the third is to be ability to recollect. Like you go home and your husband or wife or a neighbor or friend says, what did you listen? You should be able to give the summary. So the mind that is quiet, is available, can do all three things. Can receive, can retain, and then can recollect. So that is the test, that is my mind with me or not. And so as we do this text over the next few months, we will be addressing all these topics in more detail. So this was just a 2-week brief introduction to this test, to this text, so that we have an enthusiasm to study, we have a desire to study, because all these questions that we have asked and that we have covered will be addressed in more detail. Any comments anybody has? No, it's different. Reverence, you can even rever your mother, you know, your mother. You have reverence for your mother. You not only have love, but you have respect for your father. So reverence is good. You must have reverence for God, because God is almighty. He is all powerful. He has given me whatever I have. So I should have gratitude and reverence. But fear is something different. Like you fear, like people who were living under Nazi Germany. Now they were afraid to speak. Right? Or people living under communism, even right now in China. If you say even a single word against the Chinese government, you immediately disappear. You never appear again. And we find people who were very powerful, very, you know, in great position. The moment they spoke one line against the Chinese government, they were gone. Nobody ever heard from them. So fear is different. So I think some degree of fear is okay when you have not understood who is God. And for a person who is beginning on the spiritual journey, or a person who just goes to the church or temple and listens, and the priest says, you know what, you have to be a good person, otherwise you will suffer in hell. And for that person, he's fine. You know, he's a laborer, or he's a farmer, or, you know, his job is to work. So he'll say, okay, I should be a good person, I should do my duty, otherwise God will punish me. And so for that person, it may be okay. But to truly understand what is God, once you understand him, you realize he is nothing to be afraid of. There is nothing to be afraid of, because God is not somebody separate from me. You are afraid of somebody who is separate from you. Like, you may be afraid of the president, or you may be afraid of the police, or you're afraid of the CHP when you're driving on the highway because you don't want to go over 55. But God is me. He's the essence in me. So why should I be afraid? So one has to have an attitude of reverence and love. Love, and love. That is the only way to reach him. There are so many texts, all the great saints, all of them talk about love. Nobody talks about fear of God. Nobody. Even Jesus, repeatedly he says, you know, love thy neighbor, love God and all that. And Buddha is the same thing. All the great saints. So, reverence is different from fear. Yes. Right.
Or you mean something else?
Last week we had talked in detail about it, that remove the negativities of the mind. As I said, the mind can be impure or can be agitated, and both the either impure or agitated mind, both are a problem. So impure mind is the mind that is full of anger, greed, jealousy, hatred, arrogance, intolerance, all those. So that is the impurity, the dirt of the mind. And the agitation of the mind is the agitation of inner thoughts and inner conflicts and the disturbances. So, like we had said, a bucket of water which is clean and which is undisturbed can reflect the sun into the room. But if the bucket is agitated, or if the bucket is full of mud and dirt, it cannot reflect the light. So what we mean is the mind that is purified is, the negative tendencies have been removed and positive tendencies have been placed in it, and at the same time it is not an agitated mind. The ability to calm the mind, because even you find that even when I'm driving, sometimes if I'm in a rush and I'm in a hurry and I have too many things going on, I feel that my driving becomes different. You know, it's more jerky, it's more rapid, and I have a tendency to overtake. But suddenly you realize, what am I doing? You know, why am I doing that? You know, by doing that, you may be saving 30 seconds in your trip or whatever. So the moment you become aware of your mind, every activity becomes peaceful. Whether it's driving, whether it's cooking, whether it's meditating, whether it's teaching. Same thing, when you're sitting and teaching a class, if your mind is quiet then and peaceful, the thoughts come across much better. As opposed to if your mind is very disturbed, then the thoughts also come out. And we find in certain people, in certain speakers, that they never stick with one topic. And their thoughts are so disturbed and there are so many different ideas. I think part of that comes from overreading. In my opinion, reading can be an enemy. Reading can become a problem. Reading is good, but one has to read a little bit, focus and understand completely what you have read. And also pick one direction. You know, like they say, if you want to dig for oil, you go deep. You pick one spot where you think you find. And then you go 200, 300 feet deep till you find oil. But if you dig 20 feet here, 30 feet here, 10 feet here, you will never reach oil. So there are people like that who read too much. You know, one day they are reading Gandhian philosophy, and then they are reading Vedanta, and then third day they are reading German, and then fourth day Confucius, and then the fifth day ancient Greek philosophy. So reading too much, and people think, I have read so much. And you go to their house, their library is huge. You say, I have read. But how much have you understood? How much have you applied? And how deep have you gone? So pick one. All systems of philosophy are good. We are not saying that the German Nietzsche is not good, or Confucius is not good, or Buddhist is not good, or any system of philosophy is good, but you understand it. Like here we are practicing Vedanta, we are studying the Vedanta, where there is oneness or unity. So understand that deep, and then only the reading is useful. So that is, reading can become an enemy sometimes, too much reading. Because then your mind becomes confused and you just throw different ideas. When you're starting a career, or when you're starting a spiritual journey, or when you're like, you know, we tell people, when before you go to college, check out all the alternatives and think and see which one you like. Do you like economics, or do you like physics, or do you like biology, or do you like engineering or math or political science or international? And then depending on your liking, you pick the career. And then also people sometime in the middle of the career, at age 40, they suddenly say, I'm tired of being a lawyer. I should have become a doctor. And then at age 40, they start again going to medical school because they have not thought properly. So it's a good idea to see what is out there before. But then if you're going to spend all the time in just seeking and searching, you know, and there are people also, you know, who go, one day they will go to the Sikh temple, and then one day they will go to the Christian church, and one day they will go to the Hindu temple. And that is okay in the beginning, but if you're going to just, every month you're going to change, then you're not going to reach anywhere. So I don't think one has to write down everything, but one has to understand what is my goal, what is my qualification, where do I fit in? You know, if you're a very spiritual, very emotional person. If you're an emotional person who just wants to love God and sing about Him, and you're not much interested in knowledge, then maybe the path of that kind of path, you know, where the people like the Hare Krishna who just go around singing about God and, you know, things like that. Or if you're a service-oriented person, then you can say, I'm going to work with the Habitat of Humanity and build homes for people. But all the time, even when I'm building a house, I should remember I'm doing God's work. Have God with you in the back of your mind. And then do His work. And slowly, slowly, what will happen is, as you work for God, as you get some knowledge, you will want to know who is this God. And as you work for Him, and as you have the knowledge, you develop love. So all the three things will eventually get work together. It's like, you know, we have talked about, if you want to be a good basketball player, you first have to have the physical ability. You have to be tall. If you are, you know, short like me, you know, forget it. Don't even go near. So that's number one. You should have the physical. Then you should have love for the game. And then you should have the right knowledge. You should find a good coach who can coach you. So you have to have the physical ability. You have to have the love for the game. And you have to have the right knowledge how to be a good basketball player. So similarly, in spirituality, there are different paths. So based on my ability and based on what I like, I can pick one. But then go deep into that. Once you have decided, then don't waste your time. And don't spend your whole life till age 65 or 70 just searching for a path, because then it's too late.